Naturally Speaking.
Hi, and welcome to Naturally Speaking, the podcast of the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health, and Comparative Medicine. I'm James Bergen.
And I'm Karen Hotop. Today we're continuing with our special three-part series that we like to call...
Masters of Science!
And Research.
In this series, we're taking a look at the three master's programs offered here within our institute.
This episode is part two, the MSc in Animal Ethics, Welfare and Law.
That means, if you've not listened to part one, hit pause and go listen to it now. In it, we focus on the MSc in Quantitative Methods in Biodiversity, Conservation and Epidemiology. But we also hit upon broader overlapping aspects shared by the three courses. Trust us, it's a great podcast and covers a lot of information that will help you get the most from this episode.
But for now, it's time to get ethical. The MSc in Animal Ethics, Welfare...
Wait. Didn't we decide in the last podcast just to refer to it as the Welfare Masters?
Yeah, of course, you're right. That's so much less of a mouthful. So the Welfare Masters is coordinated by Dr. Rudy Nagar and Dr. Dorothy McKeegan. We spoke to Dr. Nagar to find out about the motivation behind the course.
At the heart of the course is really the improvement of the welfare of animal. And not all places have similar high standards in animal welfare as the UK. And one of the things we're hoping to reach out with the course is to get people from all sorts of places and training the next generation, which will have their influences on animal welfare wherever they are going.
In recent years, bioethics has become increasingly important to the research community, and social attitudes have forced our society to take another look at the way we treat the animals we interact with.
Animal welfare is a relatively new subject, and it is a mandated science. That means it's done for a practical social purpose, and that encompasses the ethics of the society, what they find right or wrong in terms of animal welfare.
And of course, underpinning all of this is a host of laws and regulations, which are continually being reviewed and refined.
Given the complexity and sensitivity of these issues, there is an increased need for trained professionals who not only have a strong scientific background, but also understand the philosophical and political arena of animal welfare. This training allows them to bridge the large ideological gaps that can arise between different stakeholders when animals are involved.
And an animal welfare person then will guide actions, policy and legislation. And all of that has to be, of course, based on high quality science.
As we covered in part one of this series, there is a lot of overlap in the first semester of the three courses. This covers the key research skills, which gives students training in writing and communication, basic and advanced stats, and simple programming tools. Combined, these give them a strong scientific foundation before they pick more specialised modules in the second semester.
We are teaching them key research skills because it is very important to understand the underlying science of welfare, as well as for students to perform high quality science in themselves, because it is the science which in the end underpins all animal welfare, and that has to be done well in order to serve animals.
But it's important to remember how much flexibility the students actually have.
When we designed these courses, it was this flexibility we had in mind, because we think it's important that students who are interested in animal welfare get a lot of quantitative skills that they wouldn't normally get in other programs. And it's important for the quantitative students to have the opportunity to select from a broader range of biological questions that they might want to answer.
And of course, if you took our advice and listened to the first episode, you'll recognize the voice of Professor Barbara Mabel.
Of course, while there is a lot of shared learning, even in semester one, the three courses diverge. The quantitative students take a course on biodiversity, the MRes students are starting their first projects, and the welfare students are jumping straight into the discussions on ethics and law. This means, despite that initial overlap, the aims of all three courses are starkly different.
So our aims is to teach to students, first of all, an understanding of animal ethics. And that is very rarely done in university courses, and we want them to get an understanding of animal ethics so they can have a discussion with others with respect.
Welfare students cover a broad range of both theoretical and practical aspects of their discipline, and this means that they get to interact with a great diversity of people.
We are getting practitioners into the university to teach our students, and we also take students out to see practitioners at the day-to-day work and be able to speak to them.
And of course, it isn't just a great diversity of people that the students get to interact with.
In our course, we are including animals in all contexts, from laboratory animals to farm animals and zoo animals, as well as wild animals.
After the students finish their skills courses, they then get to put everything together in their final projects. Similar to the quantitative course, the welfare students will design and conduct research of their choosing based on their own interests.
Every student will do an independent research project. Whenever possible, we try to enable projects that have practical applications that will ultimately be useful for the animals and their welfare.
At the end of this course, welfare students are armed with the skills required to follow a wide range of career paths.
Students that leave the course will have all the necessary skills to go on to a PhD if they wish to do so. Others have chosen to apply their skills to work directly with animals, be it in labs or in zoos, or work for charities that campaign for improvement in animal welfare.
Or, as one of our students phrased it,
possibilities are endless, we'll see.
But more from Whitney later.
So that's the welfare course in a nutshell. However, just like in our last episode, we were curious to find out what the students really thought. So we went out and asked them.
Just like in the quantitative course, the welfare students came from diverse backgrounds, all drawn to Glasgow because of the unique learning experience they could receive here at the Institute.
My name is Miriam van der Zwalmen. I did an undergrads in marine biology and then wanted to kind of go into the welfare of marine animals. I decided to come to this uni based on the course structure. It's the only one that I found that kind of integrated the science, the law and the ethics, which other courses kind of looked at only one of those three.
Miriam brought her marine biology background to her master's project. She looked at the impact human activities are having on one of the UK's most iconic coastal species.
I worked with Dr. Anna McGregor looking at whether wildlife tourism has an impact on the stress levels of common seals in Scotland. I looked at both the presence of pedestrians near haul-out sites and the presence of tour operators that go see the seals on a regular basis. And then I looked at their behavior to see whether they showed most signs of stress, whether they were alert and fled to the water and so on. And I also looked at the vocalization of the seals, which hasn't really been done yet, to see if that can be used to indicate stress levels. And my findings were mostly that it's pedestrians that cause stress in common seals. Boat-based, I didn't find any stress with them, which is very good. And also found that dogs cause a lot of stress as well in the seals. And there are some indications that vocalizations can be used to indicate stress levels.
Now, you might expect to get a bit wet working with a marine species, but this year in Scotland,
It was very wet. Yeah, I mean, we had a few hours of sunny weather, but most of my days were just spent sitting looking at seals in the rain. And one day it was particularly bad. I had a huge umbrella plus 6 layers of waterproof clothing and thermal, and I was soaked through. So, yeah, very wet. But the seals were cute.
So the second student we spoke to came to us through a very different route. Katja Isaksen is a veterinary nurse originally from Norway who has spent the last few years working in clinics and as a lab animal tech. So what was it that enticed her to come back to university, and in particular, this course?
Mostly it was the combination of not just the science part, but you also get the ethics and the law part, which you can go out and use that for policy things, and you can you get a bit more of a broad background. You don't have to go into science with it, but you still get a really good scientific background.
Perhaps the biggest area concerning animal welfare is that of agriculture. Katja took advantage of one of the university's more surprising assets in order to look at one of the more unusual practices in livestock research.
I looked at some sheep up at the farm that the university has in Cocknow, and they did a surgical procedure called a fistulation.
Fistulation is a surgical procedure where a permanent hole is made in the side of a ruminant animal, like a cow or a sheep, in order to gain access to the stomach and to study digestion. Sealed with a plug most of the time, this gives researchers a window into the digestive tracts of some of our most valuable livestock species. Katja was interested in seeing what effects this had on the animals themselves, And while most pain studies focus only on the first few hours post-surgery, Katya didn't think this was sufficient. Instead, she focused on the first 2 weeks.
There was a huge impact. I only had 4 animals, which is a tiny, tiny, tiny sample size. I got significant results for behavior, for heart rate variation, and fecal cortisol concentrations. So there's definitely a huge pain and welfare impact for the surgery, and that can be very useful for vets to know so that they can give them better pain medications in the future. There's very, very little research done into that kind of thing.
While Katya praised the shared research skills, she was also keen to show how valuable the more unique aspects of the welfare course were in the second semester.
We did a lot of assignment writing and a lot of discussion in this class about issues and about ethics and about this legislation and things, and I think it's a really good grounding, I think, for the future.
Katya wasn't the only student to work on livestock. Emma Strasnick joined us from an undergrad at the University of British Columbia, where a passion for animal welfare emerged.
I've been working with Dr. Dorothy McKeegan, and I've been studying the behavioral time budget of dairy calves, looking specifically at calves that were assisted during birth and calves that had normal births. We're thinking there might be some kind of pain going on that would limit their behaviors. So my sample size was quite small because we're quite limited by time, but I did find a very marginal effect in play behavior, which is a luxury behavior that we would expect to see decreased if a calf was in pain or fatigued. Future research is actually going to be going on that will test out pain medications to see if that reverses what we've seen.
While the old adage goes, you get out what you put in, it's important to keep in mind that help is always nearby for when you want to take your research in an unfamiliar direction.
I took a risk, and my previous research had been in laboratory animal welfare, so rodents, and I wanted to step outside my comfort zone, and I worked with cows, and it worked really well. I had a lot of support, and I'm really happy with what's come out of this.
Now, the majority of our students come to us with a biology degree, but this course is special in that science is just one of several aspects, opening the doors to people with perhaps more unexpected backgrounds for the Institute.
My name's John. I'm from Edinburgh. My background was as a law graduate, and I started training to be a criminal lawyer, which is when I realised that I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. And I remember seeing this master's advertised, and I just thought it looked like something I wanted to do, you know, not only focusing on animal welfare science, but bringing the ethical and legal side into it as well, which I thought was pretty cool.
While you may have expected John to focus heavily on the legal aspect of animal welfare, he took a very different approach to his project.
I joined up with the thermal imaging group here, who are already doing various things with infrared thermography. So I was looking at the thermal response of laying hens after a positive and a negative event.
Researchers at the Institute have shown that thermal imaging can be used to measure levels of positive and negative stress remotely, unlike current methods such as heart rate and respiratory rate and hormone levels, which are really quite invasive. Another important difference is that thermal imaging may also be able to distinguish between the positive and negative stimuli, unlike those more traditional methods.
Although I'm still in the process of assigning meaning to all the changes, there were significant differences in the wattle, face and eye. Basically, it's pretty cool to think there are differences that can be looked at in more detail in the future that might tell us more about affective states in hens and animals in general.
Given that John had no formal scientific training before this course, what did he make of his first research experience?
The research project was great. I mean, it was the first time I've ever actually done a piece of research work like that, but I just learned so much, you know, from the husbandry and handling of hens to how to design an experiment to, you know, everything like that. It's just been, I've really enjoyed the learning curve.
As John came to us from a law background, we were interested to find out, on this mixed course, who did he think had the best head start? Him or the biologists?
I would say the biology graduates, but I've been pleasantly surprised that I've been able to hold my own amongst people that have got a background in relevant science. So it's been the first time I've been really studying something that I'm just interested in, and I never really noticed when I was doing my first degree because I had no frame of reference. But it's just been really cool to come in and constantly be learning more about animal welfare.
While we've heard a lot about the animal welfare issues that are important for agriculture, we have a more intimate connection with the animals we share our own homes with. And this more personal connection has been the driving force behind some of our students' projects.
I'm Kirsty van Doorn. I'm originally from the Netherlands. I did my project on purebred dog owners, and I was interested in why they would buy them despite the severe welfare issues they face, and whether the different reasons from owners of crossbred dog and mixed breeds.
We tend to think of dogs as our best friends, so it's shocking to see what the desire for perfection has done to many breeds. Selective breeding to get that perfect purebred means that some can no longer give birth naturally due to exaggerated physical features, and many inherit debilitating conditions due to the lack of genetic diversity in their lines. So with her interest in this, what exactly did Kirsten look at specifically?
I researched how important certain aspects were, like health and appearance and stuff like that, and different aspects of appearance itself, like size and color. And it turned out that some of them were significant. With appearance, the shape of the head and the eyes and the color type of coat were more important to owners than the other two, crossbred dog owners and mixed breed dog owners. I also found that the aspects that they considered when they're making their choice for dogs, that will also influence their dog-human relationship as well, which was very interesting because it hasn't been previously reported.
Overall, Kirsten surveyed 173 dog owners and found that purebred owners keyed in on specific traits more than either crossbreed or mixed breed owners. Ultimately, she thinks that the only option to increase purebred welfare is to try and reduce the extreme conformity required by breed standards. And from dogs, we are going to move swiftly onto cats, big ones. But first, let's meet Ramon and hear about his somewhat unorthodox birthday activity.
I'm Ramon Philippet. After I did my course in Belgium as a vet nurse, I had the feeling that I wanted to do something more, and especially in the interest of animal welfare. So for my birthday, I decided to do a trip to the postgraduate open days, and after that meeting, I just know that this was what I wanted to do.
For his project, Ramon decided to tackle one of the most controversial areas of animal welfare: large captive predators in zoos.
I did a research to investigate what the effect is of conspecific territorial goals of African lions on the social, territorial, active and inactive behavior of lions in captivity. I also measured cortisol levels to see what was the general stress level, and I assessed the enclosure usage. The main findings were that there was a significant increase in social behavior. There was a decrease of inactive behavior. There was not much difference in the real active behavior and the territorial behavior, but that was because I played the sounds at a distance.
It's clear that Ramon thoroughly enjoyed his time on this course, even being
very amazed about how they teach the statistics.
However, the best thing about Ramon is that he was in this purely for the love and the joy of it. While his dream job is to be an animal inspector or zookeeper, he is keeping his future options wide open.
With me, the reason why I wanted to come to Glasgow especially was I always have a dream to change something positive for animals. And so for me as long as I can make a change for animals, then I will take the job.
Despite most of our students coming to us directly from their first degree, the final student we will talk to joined us from a high-profile organization that many biology undergraduates dream of working with.
My name is Whitney Kent. I'm from Washington, D.C. I worked almost 4 years at World Wildlife Fund. We had such cool programs and cool projects, and I just felt so detached from it. I wanted to be the one working on those and sending the information back to DC. Like, I didn't want to be behind the desk, like, getting the information. I wanted to be the one sending the information. But yeah, I loved working at World Wildlife Fund. It was really great. They're a great organization.
While she may have decided to come back to university, Whitney stuck close to her WWF roots in her research project.
I looked at rescued chimpanzees at a sanctuary. So I was actually in Spain doing my data collection, which was pretty cool. Very hot, though. But these were chimpanzees from mostly pets and entertainers. A lot of them had been at the sanctuary for many years, 10 to 30 years. So I wanted to look at if long-term rehabilitation can recover them, because then, you know, they might not ever be able to fully recover, but can living with conspecifics and getting the right socialization and can all that, you know, help them ultimately adapt and live out healthy, happy lives? So it was exciting. I wish I had more time for data collection, though. It was a very, very short amount of time, but I think the experience was amazing.
Whitney's sample size was too low to draw any significant results, but her work tantalizingly suggests that we can help rescued chimpanzees recover by encouraging natural behavior. This can be accomplished by using enrichment and allowing them to socialize with other chimps.
So, having given up her job with WWF, does she think she made the right decision?
No, I thought the program was great. Definitely was a lot. We were very busy, a lot of papers, a lot of presentations, but I mean, that's what you get with a one-year course. We had some really great speakers, you know, other professors coming in and talking to us, and then all the students in the program were from all different backgrounds as well. So, you know, when we had class discussions and things like that, you definitely had a lot of different perspectives and definitely got me thinking about things that, you know, I never really considered. So I thought that was pretty cool.
It's clear that our institute's master's in animal ethics, welfare and law is unique, as evidenced by the wide international representation in the course's students. And the wide range of research projects shows the scope of the course's remit.
However, the most rewarding thing from our perspective is seeing how much the students get from this program. And we hope they go on to contribute to many important projects that will help improve animal welfare standards, both in the UK and abroad.
And this brings to a close part two of our master's series. Our next podcast, the last in this special run, will focus on the third master's degree offered here at the Institute, the MRes in Ecology and Environmental Biology. Make sure to look out for it in January 2016.
As a final message, we wanted to bring you a closing thought from Emma, who we heard from earlier. It's a message that resonates very strongly with us.
Glasgow is a really great city, and certainly the people I've met on the course, although not all Scottish, have all been great. So I wasn't expecting to feel so at home, but I really have.
I'm James Bergen.
And I'm Karen Hotop.
Tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the Naturally Speaking podcast. If you've got any ideas for future shows or want to get involved, then please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is naturallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Naturally Speaking is a podcast from the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine at the University of Glasgow. For more information, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the NS Podcast, and you can download future episodes and find more information at our blog at naturallyspeakingpodcast.wordpress.com.